Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to another hour of the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. We got lots to talk about this hour, plus we invite your phone calls. We want you to participate, 877-726-TALK. That's 877-726-8255. And this hour, we're going to share with you a surprising way in which vitamin D can fight metabolic syndrome. That's the single most prevalent cause of chronic disease in America. But let's start this hour with a phone call, which is tied it over from last hour. Peggy from Princeton, New Jersey. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I went to the doctor because I thought I had a burn, and I thought I had a bladder infection, but it came back negative.
Yeah.
So I still had the burn a little bit, and I started taking straight cranberry juice, you know, the very very undiluted.
Right, the tart concentrate, right.
Yeah, but it kind of burned. It's affecting my stomach. So I just wondered, you know, A, is there anything else I can take other than the cranberry juice? And B, why do I still have a burn if it came back negative?
Right. So, that's a little puzzling because sometimes what will happen is you'll have the opposite. You know, the doctor will do a urinalysis and tell you, hey, did you know you have a lot of bacteria in your urine? It's like, looks like you're brewing an infection. How you feeling? And many women especially will say, I'm fine. I don't even notice it. That's called asymptomatic bacteriuria, which means there's bacteria in the urine, but it's not really amounting to a urinary tract infection. The recommendation these days is not to treat that, especially in elderly individuals where antibiotic treatment could have harmful effects and, you know, where it's fairly common to have bacteria in the urine. And in those instances, I suggest that people drink cranberry concentrate to suppress the bacterial count. It works pretty well. Or if that doesn't work, to use something called D-mannose. D-mannose is a type of sugar that's non-caloric. It won't make you fat. And it prevents the bacteria from adhering to the bladder wall. And it's effective if you have a mild urinary tract infection or as a preventive if you have bacteria in your urine or if you're prone to urinary tract infections. But if you have a rip-roaring urinary tract infection, sometimes you really need to pull the trigger with an antibiotic, unfortunately. So what you have, though, is pain where the urine is sterile and there's no signs of infection. And that could result from some kind of inflammation in your bladder. Are you finding that you're having to urinate frequently?
Yes.
Okay. And you mind sharing how old are you, please?
67.
Okay. So it's not uncommon for women to have postmenopausally, presumably you're not on hormones, right?
Right, I am not, yes.
Okay, to have a little bit of less bladder control, number one, and also bladder capacity with urinary frequency, but you're having stinging or burning or pain, right?
Yeah, not often, just sometimes, yes.
Just from time to time. So what that's sometimes due to is it's due to lack of estrogen. There's a little bit of what's called atrophic vaginitis, and of course, you know, the urethra is in that area. And sometimes a trip to the GYN can be helpful to, you know, see what's going on down there and see if perhaps you might benefit from maybe topical application of a little estrogen to plump up the tissue around there so it's a little stronger and less liable to be susceptible to discomfort when you urinate. That's
okay.
One theory. I mean, another theory is, God forbid, you could have something like interstitial cystitis, which is painful, causes urinary frequency and pain, but it's an inflammatory disorder. It's not infectious. But in order to diagnose that, you'd have to have a cystoscopy. I doubt if that's what's going on. You probably want to, you know, that would be as a last resort to rule that out. You know, sometimes diet change can help that, too. You know, the cranberry, on the one hand, suppresses the bacteria, but it's a little acidic. And
right.
Maybe, you know, you can go on a little bit of a lower acidic diet, less in the way of spicy foods. You can use some calcium citrate is sometimes helpful in reducing that type of infection. It's recommended in the treatment of interstitial cystitis sometimes, or vulvodynia, which is vulvar pain. And, you know, just taking maybe, you know, some calcium citrate, which is going to be helpful for your bones anyway, might help you alleviate the problem. But, you know, maybe a checkup from the GYN to find out what's going on in there. Have you been to the GYN for a routine checkup lately?
No, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, a lot of women, 67, you know, everything's fine, don't bother. But, you know, something is a little uncomfortable down there. And, you know, if your efforts at self-care don't turn the corner on this, maybe, you know, have a look-see, see if it's, you know, loss of estrogen or atrophic vaginitis that's causing the discomfort. That's a possibility, I think.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, my pleasure. Good luck to you. And let us know. Hey, call us back and tell us if we hit a home run with that advice. All right, 877-726-TALK is our number. And I promise to talk to you about vitamin D. Well, vitamin D, so helpful for so many conditions. And it's actually thought that vitamin D can be helpful for prevention of type 2 diabetes. Now, let's go back to traditional animal studies, which led us down the wrong path in our assessment of the effects of fat on cardiovascular disease. If you feed rats and mice fat, they often develop coronary artery disease. We demonstrated that in the 1950s, and then we were off to the races on the theory that fat was the culprit in cardiovascular disease. But what if I were to tell you that they just discovered that there was a flaw in that research, that if you give those rodents adequate vitamin D and feed them a high-fat diet, well, they simply don't develop metabolic syndrome. Pretty interesting. New study, vitamin D improves gut flora and metabolic syndrome. How does it work? Well, apparently, the vitamin D exerts its benefits by changing the bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract, your microbiome, which we now know has a lot to do with metabolism. In other words, the bugs in your gut can interpret the diet that you eat to either make you fat or thin. If you got a bad microbiome, you might be more likely to become obese with the self-same diet that might yield a different result in an individual with a good microbiome who might stay thin. So scientists have now discovered that vitamin D deficiency is necessary for metabolic syndrome to progress in mice fed a high-fat diet, and the underlying problem is with the gut bacteria. So they say if these findings can be validated in humans, by the way, most humans aren't rodents. That's been my experience. Maybe a couple, with a couple of exceptions. Maybe you have some friends or relatives, part rodent. But most humans, not rodents, they say if these findings can be validated in humans, sunbathing and vitamin D supplements may be feasible and affordable approaches to improve or even prevent metabolic syndrome. How about that? Well, we've talking up the benefits of vitamin D, and vitamin D may be a shield against the deleterious effects or even of fat or even excess carbohydrates, according to this new study. So they say, in summary, a high-fat diet alone is not enough to cause metabolic syndrome, but it's needed in combination with vitamin D deficiency. And the researcher here remains optimistic that the results of their study can be confirmed in humans. So why not take some additional vitamin D to head off metabolic syndrome? By the way, metabolic syndrome, the single most common pathway to death and disease in America, characterized by increased girth, increased triglycerides, low HDL, bad ratio of cholesterol to HDL, and the beginnings of elevation in hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of blood sugar. And you don't have to be out and out diabetic to have metabolic syndrome and experience a higher risk of stroke and heart attack, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, inflammatory disorders with a borderline hemoglobin A1C of 5.8 to 6.2. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You can call us. 877-726-TALK is our number for Intelligent Medicine.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And apropos of that announcement, a very popular newsletter article this week on iron. Iron and the good and the bad. Too much iron can be bad for you. Not enough can be bad for you. You want your iron to be just right. And you can find out how by checking out our newsletter article. If you'd subscribed to the newsletter, you would have gotten your inbox. But you can go to drhoffman.com and look at the news feed and read that article, find out all about iron. And we have several ways to reach me if you got a question. You can call us today. 877-726-TALK is our number for live calls. You can also email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. That will then become grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's a podcast wherein we answer listener questions. And that's a very entertaining podcast that many people enjoy. And in addition, if you go to drhoffman.com, there's a little rectangle on the right side of our homepage. And if you click on that, it'll prompt you to enter a question, as a listener did. And you can fire up that question now, Corain. Do we have that question?
My daughter has elevated liver enzymes, and I would like to know a good way to get those enzymes down. Thank you.
Okay. Question about elevated liver enzymes in a child. Okay, well, this is concerning because normally it takes a while to mess up your liver. And many adults have elevated liver enzymes due to various causes. The most common cause in the past used to be hepatitis, but hepatitis, less common these days. Infectious hepatitis. It's actually becoming more amenable to treatment. And there's the hepatitis vaccine, which is helping to keep it from causing a lot of havoc. But the other cause that's a concern in a child is, could this be autoimmune hepatitis? And so I don't know the answer, and I don't know if the pediatrician knows the answer. I think your daughter needs to see a pediatric gastro or a hepatologist, someone who specializes in liver disease, to figure out what's going on, because it's a sign that there's something going on in the liver. There's some sort of stress or an infection or an inflammatory process. Or, if your child is overweight and eating a bad diet, it might be the beginnings of fatty liver in a child. Unfortunately, we're seeing more and more type 2 diabetes, which is often accompanied by fatty liver in younger and younger people. So I don't know which is the case. If it were autoimmune hepatitis, powerful drugs are sometimes used there. But natural approaches really can work well. A really clean diet, alpha lipoic acid, various protective nutrients like phosphatidylcholine really work well. Dandelion extract is helpful in protecting the liver, as is milk thistle. And, you know, I hesitate to recommend those things without knowing exactly what's going on with your child, because we don't, you know, it's kind of like firing a missile without a target. We don't know precisely what the cause of this is. If it's dietary, yeah, a lower carb diet's going to make a difference. along with protective nutrients, some of the protective nutrients that are helpful that I just mentioned. Vitamin E is helpful also in fatty liver, but I'm not so anxious to assume that that's the case in a child. You know, it may not be the case in a child. So need a little more detail on the question. I wish I had you on the line. But, you know, you can email us some additional information on this to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll discuss the case further. All right. I just want to mention, you know, last hour we mentioned Propax with NT Factor. It's a complete vitamin and mineral formula with antioxidants. But, you know, I suggested to Nutritional Therapeutics that some people may want to keep their favorite multi and still harness the power of NT Factor. So you can get NT Factor alone as healthy aging, which is the perfect accompaniment to whatever supplement regimen you're already taking, providing you with unique energy support of pure NT Factor in a potent delivery system. I've been taking NT Factor for years. You know, there's a 45-day money-back guarantee on it, so you have nothing to lose. So to order Propax or Healthy Aging, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Try NT Factor as healthy aging, or you can take the combination Propax with NT Factor. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll take more of your phone calls, 877-726-TALK. And we got much more to talk about this weekend on Intelligent Medicine. Stay with us.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Call us, 877-726-TALK is our number. And we had that caller earlier who was talking about a child with elevated liver enzymes. And, you know, I listed the possible causes. It could be an infection. It could be something like mono, a virus. It could be some form of autoimmune disorder, autoimmune hepatitis, unfortunately becoming increasingly common in children. It could be the early onset of fatty liver, which usually an adult problem, but increasingly we're seeing it in kids who eat too many calories, too much sugar, and fat builds up in their liver, and they are usually overweight, but they don't have to be because a poor diet can have a harmful effect on liver function. And I want to share with you yet another possibility in terms of fatty liver disease. Now, fatty liver disease is on the increase in America. And paradoxically, we're seeing it actually, we're actually winning the battle against infectious hepatitis. It used to be that blood transfusions would give people infectious hepatitis, but more and more people are getting the vaccine. More precautions are undertaken, and there's less and less infectious hepatitis, but there's more and more nutritional hepatitis, and there may be yet another insidious cause of hepatitis, and that's environmental toxicity, the stuff that we put into our food and water and air. And one of the things that we give a pass to is Roundup. And Roundup has very much to do with foods that are GMO. You know, there's all this fuss and bother about labeling GMOs And some people say, well, GMOs are, there's no problem. There are no studies that say that GMOs undermine human health in any way, shape, or form. But I'm going to share with you a study that really calls into question the use of GMOs, because GMOs make crops Roundup ready. You've heard that term, Roundup ready? Well, what that means, I mean, if you've used Roundup, and God knows I've used Roundup in the past because I thought it was really cool to squirt the weeds with this wonderful chemical that would zap the weeds. I did it for a long time before I recognized the harmful effects on the environment and on myself and people walking on my driveway, especially with little kids around, glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup herbicide. Glyphosate is something that they spray on crops and ordinarily would kill the crop, but a GMO crop is built to have resistance to the glyphosate. In other words, it'll survive the onslaught of the glyphosate. So you can spray tons of glyphosate on crops that are GMO and they'll survive. But that doesn't mean that they aren't saturated with residues of glyphosate. More and more studies are showing that people across the United States are walking around with high blood and urine levels of glyphosate in their system. But studies yet haven't shown conclusively that glyphosate is harmful. The World Health Organization lists glyphosate as a potential carcinogen. But stateside, we still permit its use. And I'm going to share with you a study, and this didn't get a lot of attention, but it just came out, that suggests that even very low doses of glyphosate, comparable to the amount that we get when we have, say, corn or any GMO food that has been sprayed with glyphosate, can cause liver problems. So they say in the study, a number of toxicity studies have shown that glyphosate and its commercial formulations, like Roundup, have toxic effects, especially with respect to liver and kidney, and potentially adverse hepatic effects, that's liver effects, of glyphosate were first observed in the 1980s, including its ability to disrupt liver mitochondrial function. Well, that ain't good. You mess up mitochondrial function, and you get liver damage. Nevertheless, they say in the study, it should be noted that most results from these toxicity studies were obtained at doses far greater than general human population exposure. Okay? So, all right, it could be argued these studies were, you know, if you feed tons and tons of something to a rat, the rat's going to die, but people don't get such high doses of glyphosate. But this study was done looking at very low doses of glyphosate. And what do they find? Well, their analysis confirmed hallmarks of hepatotoxicity, or damage to the liver. And they found that there were biomarkers of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which confirm the metabolic dysfunction resulting from chronic exposure to an ultra-low dose of Roundup. So, hey, you know, kind of thought-provoking, isn't it, that eating GMO foods exposes us to more Roundup because they're Roundup ready, right? They can be treated with high doses of herbicides to kill the weeds, and they'll survive. But will your liver survive upon exposure to these products? And it's just a strong rationale for caution in exposing vast segments of our populace to these chemicals, especially when there's not even a warning permitted by the government. Government says you can't even label things as non-GMO. We're seeing some inroads on that as some states approve regulations that allow GMO labeling. But there's a big pushback from industry because they say, well, we don't want to get people upset. We don't want people, you know, people don't understand this issue. It's complicated. They're going to just, you know, walk past the aisle where products that contain GMOs are, and they'll head straight for the organic foods. And we don't want to have competition from that sector of our of our agricultural economy. I'll put us out of business. But this is an important issue, and we want to keep highlighting here on Intelligent Medicine. All right, we had a caller. She's welcome to call us back, Verena from Harlem. But we'll continue and talk about tonsillectomies. Did you have your tonsils out? Well, if you, like me, are a baby boomer, chances are you did. Because tonsillectomy was a ritual that most of us underwent as kids or as teenagers. Almost like a rite of passage, like a routine procedure, like circumcision. You know, so routine. It's like, who didn't have their tonsils out? And they kind of enticed us with getting our tonsils out, because they told us, if you get your tonsils out, you can eat as much ice cream as you want. Because they thought, hey, all that cool ice cream on those sore tonsils, it's going to feel real good. And besides, you're sick and you need some consolation, so you can have ice cream. But when I had my tonsils out, I felt betrayed, because when they gave me ice cream, it hurt like hell when I was swallowing it. Never forgot that. But anyway, they got my tonsils, as they did with many kids of that era. The vogue has turned, and we're seeing less tonsillectomies, fortunately, now to be replaced by ear tubes, which perpetuates the income of ear, nose, and throat doctors, fortunately for them. But as with many things that have been done traditionally in medicine, like radical breast surgery, they used to do like radical mastectomies. They take off half your chest wall in an effort to halt the progression of the cancer. They did that for 50 years until they found out that that was barbaric and led to no improved outcomes and horribly mutilated many women. Well, a new study from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, done just this January, removing tonsils modestly reduced throat infections in the short term in children with moderate obstructive sleep disordered breathing. They got big tonsils, so they snore. Or recurrent throat infections. See, that's another reason they claim it's helpful to take your tonsils out, because if you're like, you know, you got big tonsils, and it interferes with kids' sleep, with school performance. It's an airway problem. That's one of the reasons. The other reason, you've got frequent sore throats all the time. So take out the tonsils. Well, the research has found that throat infections and school absences declined, but only in the first year after children received tonsil surgery, as well as healthcare visits for sore throats. However, the benefits of reduced infection did not persist over time. In other words, for a year, it was like, oh, great, I'm a tonsil out. Hey, I'm so much better. Thank goodness. But as with other types of surgical intervention, like back surgery, oh, what a marvelous relief. I feel so much better. But you look at that same patient 3, 5, 10 years out, and they have just as many back problems as someone who hasn't undergone back surgery, maybe even worse. So short-term fix, long-term no benefit. And, you know, we must really put tonsillectomy on the trash heap of medical procedures, because unless your tonsils literally prevent you from breathing normally or are horribly diseased, it's rarely worth the risk, which is substantial, because kids, even time to time, even die from tonsillectomy procedures. So it's not inconsequential. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Call us at 877-726-TALK. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands. Why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And let's take a call now from Verena in my hometown in New York City. How are you doing? Hello, Verena. Hello, Verena. Are you there? I guess Verena is stepped away from the phone. Do we have? Let's do this and let's see if Verena comes back. Let's talk about the Zona Plus, because if you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I've got some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. And who's not interested in avoiding the downsides of all those blood pressure medications with their side effects? The Zona Plus is a new natural medical innovation. It's the real deal, in my opinion. It's been very helpful for Hoffman Center patients as well as listeners. We've gotten great feedback. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective that it works for 9 in 10 people. Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. And there are at least 22 clinical studies that confirm that regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. That's 888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. And let's try Verena.com. Verena, are you there? How you doing?
Yes. Hello?
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Dr. Hoffman. How you doing?
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. I'm listening
to you for a long time, and I learned a lot. Now
excellent.
I need some advice. My problem is I have for over 20 years low back pain, degenerated disc, and the problem is the SI joint. It locks up, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
So, I get anxiety, depression, everything that comes with chronic pain.
Sure.
Recently, I started to take 10 or 12 fish oil capsules.
Well, that's a good way to go. That is a good.
I feel so much better. Does it work on the COX-2, like Celebrex?
Well, that's interesting. You know, it doesn't really work like the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which have a COX-2 mechanism. But, you know, It's fortunate that it doesn't work that way, because when you block that cyclooxygenase is what COX stands for. So COX-2 is a pathway in the body that helps with reducing pain. But if you block the cyclooxygenase pathway, you also tend to increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. That's been shown in trials of people who take high-dose non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs for a long time. Now, with fish oil, so you don't get a COX action, so the pain relief is not as dramatic or quick, but it works through a prostaglandin mechanism. We're getting a little complicated with biochemistry here, but that prostaglandin mechanism reduces the inflammatory chemicals that worsen inflammation, okay, that worsen pain. And so generally you're going to get an effect that takes, you know, several weeks to work. And, you know, every year that you keep taking high-dose fish oil, you may notice increased improvements. Now, the other thing that happens is fish oil works on the brain in a positive way. It has an antidepressant effect. And so this is kind of a chicken and egg thing. Does the depression exacerbate the pain, or does the pain exacerbate the depression? It's a vicious cycle. And you get an antidepressant effect from the fish oil. So, you know, I'm glad it's working for you. The other thing I would suggest is obviously some kind of good body work. You probably have considered that. You know, maybe some good chiropractic or acupuncture. Consider curcumin, because curcumin, too, has wonderful anti-inflammatory effects. And you could go in with maybe one or two capsules a couple times a day of a potent curcumin. We use a product called Meriva curcumin, M-E-R-I-V-A. It's well-absorbed and bioavailable. And maybe that, too, will help your back pain. But I appreciate you sharing.
Can I ask you another question? I ordered curcumin, and it says you shouldn't take it when you are on hydroxyurea for high platelets.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know of any contraindication, but I have to look into that. You know, hydroxyurea is something that will suppress high red blood cell counts and high platelet counts. And I'm not sure why curcumin should interfere with that. But, you know, I'll look into it and see. And, you know, if you email us to radioprogram@AOL.com, we'll get an answer for you.
And
all right.
What?
Yeah, I got to go now. I got to go. Because I got a short time to share with you some additional final stories. And here's one that has to do with magnesium and its effect on type 2 diabetes. The study's from the Journal of Human Nutrition and Dietetics. And what they found was that following magnesium supplementation, there was a significant improvement in fasting blood glucose in patients who were type 2 diabetics. So they also found that there was a favorable effect on HDL, LDL, triglycerides, and systolic blood pressure. So therefore, if you are, you know, we mentioned earlier vitamin D for metabolic syndrome. Well, magnesium is also essential if you have metabolic syndrome, which is accompanied by, yes, high blood sugar, but also low HDL, high LDL, high triglycerides, and borderline or elevated blood pressure. So consider magnesium as part of your program for metabolic syndrome. Let's take a look at the common question. What can interfere with thyroid medication? The question often arises, can patients who take thyroid medication take soy? Well, the thought is that soy may suppress the thyroid, but does soy interfere with the absorption of thyroid medication? It turns out that soy and coffee have the greatest impact on absorption of thyroid medication. It's actually true. Vitamin C has the ability to increase the absorption of thyroid medication. Other things that interfere with thyroid medication include calcium supplements and antacids. So watch out if you're a patient with hypothyroidism taking Synthroid or natural thyroid. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got lots more information at drhoffman.com for you. You can subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can download podcasts that are informative that come out daily every week.